Okay, good evening, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from Gulf Manor Synagogue in Cincinnati, Ohio. And the School of Jewish Studies is really proud to be able to offer this class as well as the Sefer Eima Banim Smeicha. You know something, people? You guys are incredible. We've gone from like nothing to something in a couple of months. We now have 6,000 people calling in. 6,000 people calling in from around the world, and I'm told a lot out of Italy, England, Canada, and the United States. If you're from some other country, we welcome you just the same. We love you here. We appreciate your calling in. Please continue to do so. 6,000 of you on Sunday night and 6,000, God willing, again this evening on Tuesday night for the Tanakh Shir. Just a quick little note, if you're not with us on Sunday night, I urge you to consider joining us. We have an awful lot of fun. That Sefer is really, truly a gewalt, as Shlomo Kalbach would say. And I gave the class in a coat room downtown at a Kollel event at the center here in downtown Cincinnati. I got myself two chairs, went into the coat room, closed the door, plugged in the phone, and had a great time. Hopefully we'll have a great time again tonight. If you're with us tonight, we are studying the first book of Malachim, as you know, and we are going to finish off the first chapter. We kind of davened it up a little bit last week, so we're going to go back and give it its due. We're going to slow it down, see the original Hebrew, try to unpack whatever we can, and then go into the second chapter. So we really are moving along at a fairly decent pace. We're seeing some of the major commentaries. We invite questions from the class. At the moment, it's just me and you people out there in phone land. There's nobody here at the moment. I guess they're all getting ready for Rosh Hashanah. Speaking of Rosh Hashanah, you know, I might as well get that out right now. Next week, Wednesday evening, is Leil Rosh Hashanah. Wednesday night begins the services for the new year, for Rosh Hashanah. And so Rosh Hashanah this year is Thursday. It's day one. Friday is day two. And then Shabbos. So for those of us who keep 2 days, and most normative Orthodox Jews do, it's a three-day holiday, which means it's going to become a little bit unbearable by about, Thursday afternoon or so. If you haven't showered and shaved and whatever it is that you normally do to keep yourself clean and well-groomed, by Motzei Shabbos, you're feeling like an absolute dish rag. It's really, it's just very, very uncomfortable. Anyway, but still in all, the Yom Tov is going to be very uplifting, and I look forward to it. But my point is this. Even though Rosh Hashanah is going to fall on Wednesday night, and I'm sure lots of people are going to be busy cooking and cleaning for a three-day holiday, that's true. And for those of you who cannot make it to the class, I well understand that. And I'm not going to penalize you. But at the same time, there might be thousands of you saying, you know something, I'd like to learn one solid hour of Tanakh on the eve of Rosh Hashanah. I want to get in 1 hour of Limud HaTorah and see the Psukim, David and Shlomo. I want to see the Rashi, I want to see the Radak, maybe the Ralbag, and we'll talk out in a Barbanel and a Malbim. You get the idea? What could you be doing more important than studying Torah on Tuesday night? I'm not telling you to meet me here Wednesday afternoon, you know, an hour before lighting the candles. Tuesday night at 7:30, you can learn Torah with us and then still get back in time to do some serious cooking and cleaning. Don't let the hour of Torah, don't let it go by you so easily. We're all trying our best to find more and more time for Torah study, and I'm willing to give the class. I mean, we're going to try and cook and clean in my house, but I'm going to ask my wife for a hall pass and try to give you a solid hour. And what could be more important than that on the eve of Rosh Hashanah? Hopping around every last minute that we can, so that we can tip the scales in our favor and do whatever we can on the eve of the holy day, really one of the holiest days, the new year, Rosh Hashanah. So please join us next week, Tuesday night, same bat time, same bat channel, 7:30, call it in, you know what to do, you've been doing it for weeks now, we're so appreciative and we're very humbled, and now we're going to really begin. Okay, so last week, if you remember, Solomon was crowned officially. Adoniyahu, he's getting super anxious, very, very nervous because it wasn't him. David wanted Solomon, and he got Solomon, and he had him anointed by the right people, by Nathan the prophet, and Tzadok HaKohen joined in. And there was Benaiah ben Jehoiada. So the three of them were involved in his coronation. And if you remember, everybody at the party, at that barbecue that Adoniah had called, they also said, you know, excuse me, I think it's just time I go home. My wife wants me home. I got to go home, wash my hair. I got to get ready for Shacharis tomorrow in the morning. I have things to do. And they all just boogied out. Okay, and that's exactly what you see in verse 49. Let's just bump ourselves up a little bit to verse 49. We'll do plenty to worry about. A little bit of review, always a good idea. Vayechardu vayakumu kol hakeruim asher lo adoniyo. So all those who had been invited, they were all keruim, they had all been called. They all got the invitations well in advance, right? 6 weeks, right? So they all got scared. That's what the prophet says, vayechardu. They all trembled. Vayakumu, they arose. Who did? Kol HaKeruim asher lo adoniyo. All those who had been invited by Adoniyo. They all got very nervous, and they all got up. Vayelchu ish ledarko. And every man went upon his path, going home, probably to his spouse or his significant other, and just saying, you know, I think that tonight's party it was fun, and now it's time to move on. Nobody wanted to get arrested for being moed the malchus, I would imagine, for being a rebel with a cause, or, you know, a rebel against the new king. So that's 49. Let's go over to Pasuk Nun, verse 50. V'Adoniyo yorei mipnei Shlomo. Now Adoniyo, he feared Solomon. He was fearful, literally. He was fearful before Solomon. He was scared. He was a pretend, aspiring candidate for the kingship, and he didn't get it. And now, if he continues to keep this up, he's going to have some serious problems, because you can't have, this is not the Catholic Church, you can't really have two popes at the same time. You cannot have two Jewish kings, although that may have happened in the past, but that was a real aberrant kind of a thing. Over here, the whole nation did it. It was approved by the king, David, that is. And Solomon was anointed by Nathan, and Nathan mostly, and Tzadok and Benaiah looked on, and that's it. So he's the real guy. So any pretenders have to be put in their place. So he's scared. Vayakam, he got up. Vayelech, he went. Vayechazek bekarnosa mizbeach. He held on to the horns of the altar. The question is, where's the altar? So the Radak gives us an answer, because he knows you're going to ask that question, and it's a perfectly legitimate one to ask. Says the Radak on those words that he held on to the corners of the Mizbeach, the altar. Where is the altar? He writes, HaMizbeach Shehaya B'Yerushalayim. That was the Mizbeach, that was the altar that was in Jerusalem. Ki heter abamos haya az. Because there was a heter, there was a permission, writes the Radak. The Radak says that at that moment, pre-First Temple times, there were the sages and scholars and scribes and so on, the elders there gave a permission, they gave a heter to put up individual bamos, individual elevated places where you could do a sacrifice. Now, of course, once the temple is built, that's not going to happen anymore. But prior to the building of the temple, you've got this time frame where there was a heter of these bamos, of these particular elevated areas, and you're able to do sacrifices over there. And he held on to the Mizbeach, to the altar, to be rescued, to be saved there. He felt that if you were to hold on to the Karnas of Mizbeach, to the these horns, if you will, of the Mizbeach, then he would be rescued, or that his life, simply put, would not be in danger. And last week, if you were with us, then you know that I was mentioning, for whatever it's worth, that there was an individual maybe 1,000 years ago who was a pain to the English king, and the English king had said, "Man, if only somebody would help me, you know, relieve me of this this wretched guy." And four of his men went off and they killed him. And if I recall correctly, he was in some sort of church setting holding on to his own altar, and it didn't help him. Over here, Adoniel thinks that holding on to the Karnas and his Bayach will help him. Well, you know, in a very funny way, it sort of does, because I don't want to give it away, although we did kind of last week. Did he get killed? No. He was actually allowed to live. Was it because he was holding on to the Karnas and his Bayach, these horns, these corners of the altar? I don't know about that, but we do know that they were, well, in some respects, you could say that they were maybe somewhat effective. He did not get executed by Solomon. Now we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We davened up the last three verses in English. Let's read them in the Hebrew, and let's see the footnotes, and we'll see some mefarshim if we can. If anybody comments, then we'll have a great time. So we're on verse 51, first chapter of 1 Kings. Chapter 1, verse 51, here's the Hebrew. Now, you got Shlomo. It was told, literally, it was told to Solomon, Lamor, as follows, saying as follows. Here's the report that he got. Hine Adoniyo Yoreas HaMelech Shlomo. Behold, Adoniyo is fearful of King Solomon. Vihine Achaz Bekanas HaMizbeach Lamor. And behold, he is holding on to the, literally, maybe the corners or the points or the horns. The corners is good. He's holding on to the corners of the Mizbeach, the altar, saying as follows, Yishava li kayom HaMelech Shlomo. Let King Solomon swear to me today, Im Yamisas Avdo Becharef. Now the word im is always a word of negation. So, I mean, I shouldn't say always, but, you know, it's very, very often the case that when you see the word im, and in the context, it doesn't mean if. If you see that in the context, it couldn't possibly mean if, and it cannot over here, then you know that it's going to be a word of negation. We say it on Leil Shabbos in the Tehillim that Hashem says, I'm so frustrated by this generation, and I'm not going to let them into, El Menuchasi. You know, how come it's escaping me right now? But that particular kapitel of Tehillim features the word im, and over there the word is a negation word, and it means God is saying, I'm not going to allow them into the land of Israel. And take a look at that kapitel Tehillim, that is the first one that we say on Leil Shabbos on Friday night. So check the last two lines of that psalm, and you'll see the word coming up over there, im, and it means no, 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 I'm not going to let them in. I'm not going to let them enter to the land of Israel. So he's asking, he is aspiring to the following vow. He wants King Solomon to promise that King Solomon will not execute him for this incredible act of chutzpah, of trying to become the king of Israel without kingly permission, without being anointed by the right one being Nathan, the prophet, and so on. So he is almost, you know, he's screaming out, I want a vow from King Solomon that he's not going to hurt me, that he's not going to kill me. And the rabbis here notice that the word lamor comes up more than once. Lamor comes up more than once. And why would that be? Why is there a need to repeat the word lamor? So it turns out that one of the Mefarshim weighs in on it. Let me see if I could find him. That's funny. I'm not actually seeing it at the moment. It's because it was a very, very long, according to this Parshan, according to this explainer, he feels that it was a little bit of an elongated speech. You've got that. Vayugav Shlomo Lamor it was told to Solomon, saying as follows, and now we have, quite a few words. Hine Adonio, Yerisa Melech Shlomo. Behold, Adonio is fearful of King Solomon. Vihine Achaz Bekanez Mizbeach, and he is holding on to the horns of the altar. Lemor, and this Lemor is there in order to, I guess, to divide up this rather long bit of narrative that the author is giving us. And we also want to know exactly what his words are. And so the author of this pasuk makes it clear exactly where he is to be quoted. He can be quoted at that word Lemor, the second one, Yishav Ali Kayom HaMelech Shlomo. That's where he begins to speak. Those are the actual words of Adonio. And the word Lemor comes up twice in order to set it off a little bit, break it up, and introduce to you the actual quote. Okay? So let's keep on looking at that. This was told to Solomon saying, Adonio is afraid of you. And he's holding on to the Kanaz on his back, and he's looking for he's looking for a vow on your part. Okay? Let's just go back to the Rashi of the previous Pasuk. The previous Pasuk was 50. What is Kanaz on his back? It comes up in 50, and it comes up in our Pasuk in 51. So what is Kanaz on his back all about? According to Rashi, he's quoting a Tanchuma, and he says that in the mind of Adonio, here's why he's holding on to the altar, to the horns or the corners of the altar. Shaya beGibon, the Mizbeach was in Gibon. And that seems to be a machlokes between the Radak, whose parish we read a moment ago, and the Radak, you recall, said that the Mizbeach is in Jerusalem, and there was a permission for Bamot, for these elevated areas, you can do a sacrifice. So the Radak feels that the Mizbeach is in Jerusalem, and that he was near Jerusalem. So where would he run? He would run back to Jerusalem. If he was in some kind of field, he would run back to Yerushalayim, and he would go to the Mizbeach. So for the Radak, it's clear the Mizbeach that's being referenced over here in this verse is clearly in Jerusalem. Rashi says, I'm going to go with the Midrash Tanchuma, which is a little bit older than the Radak. It goes back centuries earlier. And Rashi is quoting the Tanchuma, who feels that the Mizbeach Shehaya beGibon. That Mizbeach was in Gibon, not in Jerusalem. So you have a little bit of a machlokas over here among the Mefarshim as to where this Mizbeach was. At all events, this is what Adonio is thinking. Amar, he said, Haruge Bezdin Nigbaran Bekivre Bezdin. Those who are executed by Bezdin are buried in the cemetery or in the burial spots of Bezdin. And maybe in his mind, that's actually a very elevated, respectable place to be interred. And so he says, Amus Khan, I will die here, Ve'ekaver, B'kivrei Avosai, and I will be buried in the burial spots of my forefathers. Kach Dorash Rabbi Tanchuma. That's how Rabbi Tanchuma darshins the words, B'karnas HaMizbeach. Focused on being in or near the Mizbeach, and that's in Givon, and in Givon, that's where the Bezdin apparently sat, and that's where those who were executed are buried, and he wants to be buried in that particular area. A fascinating idea. I wasn't aware that he, Kivrei Avosai, I want to be buried in the Kvaros of my forefathers, that they come from Givon. Didn't really know that, but, what do I know? At all events...
Were they killed by the Bezdin?
Were they killed by the Bezdin, asked Mrs. Burlov? It's a good question. I don't really know exactly. Rashi is interpreting the words Kanos and Mizbeach, the horns or the corners of the Mizbeach. And it's not so... I would have thought that he's going to darshan a little bit about, why is he holding on to the horns? What's that all about? Is there something special about the corners? Maybe it's just being in the area is good enough. And instead, he goes in a different, slightly different direction, and he darshans about Givon and about how those executed by Beis Din are to be found in Givon. It's a little bit of a disappointment. I was hoping for a little bit more concrete information about Karnas HaMizbeach, but who am I to complain, and where's it going to get me? So we'll continue. I just wanted to see that Rashi inside and show us the machlokas between Rashi and the Radak as to where the Mizbeach is. The Radak says it's in Jerusalem. Rashi says in Givon. Okay, so we're still in 51. Okay, let's keep on going. It's a quiet pasuk. Although, I might as well speak out, we see a little footnote here in the Judaica Press, so let's see that. Verse 51, I'm on the bottom. If you have the Judaica Press, bottom page 16, if you don't have our particular publication, don't worry, I'll read this to you. It's in English. Here we go. Let King Solomon swear to me today. And, of course, that's what comes up in the pasuk. I want to have an oath, a shvua of Solomon that he's not going to hurt me. Here's the footnote, quoting the Abarbanel right now. Here Adoniel accepted the kingdom of Solomon by calling him king and calling himself the servant. And indeed, take a look at the very words. It's so true. The Abarbanel hits it on the head. The actual words of Adoniel are, Yishev ali kayom ha-melech Shlomo. Let King Solomon swear to me today, im yamis es avdo, that he will not execute his servant, the Chorev, with a sword. So yes, the Abarbanel is spot on. Adoniyo is acknowledging that Solomon is the king and that he, Adoniyo, is the servant to Solomon. Good move. And we'll continue on with that footnote. Here we're going to be quoting the Malbim. Here we go. He also wished to take advantage, Adoniyo, wish to take advantage of the customary amnesty granted by kings on the occasion of their ascension to the throne. He therefore asked Solomon to swear to him this day, Kayom. That word comes Kayom. Yishev ali Kayom. Make him swear. I want him to swear to me today, since on this day Solomon was appointed king, and therefore he's got this power of amnesty. That's customary. It seems to be a minhag among Klal Yisrael, the kings. I wonder even if it's true about non-Jewish kings too. Are they referencing that even that all kings? Because it doesn't say Jewish kings over here. That's just me adding that magic word. Is it the case that all kings, Jewish or not Jewish, do acts of amnesty and pardon on the very day of their coronation? Could be, because we're seeing that. He's aware of it, and there are kings. I'm sure they must be aware of Philistine kings and other tribes in the area, and the Amorites and the Moabites and so on. Maybe they've got kings, and maybe they're aware that kings in those tribes, in those, little fiefdoms, they grant amnesty, possibly. And that is seemingly what he's insisting on over here. He's asking Shlomo to swear to him today, this day, since on this very day he was appointed king, and he had immediately accepted his sovereignty. Adoniyo immediately accepted Shlomo's sovereignty, and therefore, says the Malbim, this is his thought, therefore that's the reason why he's asking for amnesty today, because Solomon was made king today, and Adoniyo is acknowledging it today, therefore he wants amnesty today. Not a bad thought. Shout out to the Malbim. And we move on as we unpack the verses of last week. Now we're on verse 52, Nun Beis. Vayomer Shlomo. Solomon said, now watch those words. Are you with me? Watch those words. Solomon, I'm going to add the word and give it away. He merely said. You see where I'm going? I had a professor in law school. Do you see where I'm going? He's not swearing, people. I'll give it away right now. You don't see him say, Vayishava lo Shlomo. So Solomon swore to him. It doesn't say that. It says, Vayomer Shlomo. Solomon said, Im yiyel ven chayil. And I would have translated this as meaning, if he's going to be a stand-up guy, that's American slang for if he's going to be a good, you know, virtuous person, if he's going to be a mensch, a ben chayo. But wait, there's a little bit more to that phrase, I think, than just merely a stand-up, honest kind of a guy. But stay with me for a moment. Let's just translate it this way for a second. Im yiyeh leben chayo. If he's going to be a worthy guy, a worthy man, lo yipol misa'aroso arza, then not a hair is going to fall onto the ground of his. Not a hair of his will fall upon the ground. V'imra'a timatzevo, but if wickedness is going to be found in him, it's a nifal verb, right? It's a passive, but it's in the future. And that's how you conjugate, that's how you translate it. If it will be found. Excuse me, you hear that? It's both passive and future. So, if evil will be found in him, vames, then he's going to have to die. Because you cannot, after what you've done, Adonio, you're really truly walking on a very narrow plank. And I'll let you go, but you cannot have any evil to be found in you. And that is that's the throwdown by Solomon to Adonio. I'm willing to let you live, but you got to be careful. You got to be a stand-up guy. I don't want to have any trouble from you. I don't want to find any evil in you. In other words, no more of this merida, no more rebellion. You have to just shape up, and then you can live. I won't touch you. But he's not swearing to this. He's saying it, and he's giving his word, but he is not taking an oath, which is what Adonio was looking for. But he's not going to give him that. Right. He will never give him his word. Mrs. Brother, what do you got?
He's not going to give him a carte blanche.
Right. He's not going to give him carte blanche. He's going to lay out a condition. And he's going to say to him, it all depends on you, buddy. You behave, you live. If you misbehave, I know where you live. When you hear this on The Sopranos, they scream at each other, I know where you live. I mean, that's pretty frightening if a mobster knows where you live. So over here, Shlomo is no mobster, but he's got to maintain some kind of law and order. I mean, let's be honest about it. You can't have this guy, this pretender to the throne, walking around doing stuff, and he's got to be put in his place. So this is a start. Oh, please do not kill me. I'm really very scared. Don't kill me. So Shlomo says, it all depends on you. It all comes back to you, guy. If you're going to be good, great. If not, we're going to have a problem, and you're going to have to get executed. And that's Pasuk Nun Beis. That's 52. Now, the Mefarshim say, what does it mean, and this is the phrase that we were playing on, what is a ben chayil? It's actually going to be very relevant in one more verse. We're going to see why this term ben chayil was a little bit confusing to Adonio. And he didn't quite know what to make of it. And so he did something. Nothing wrong. He was ultra respectful because he didn't want to, you know, step out of bounds. At which point, I don't want to give it away just yet. We'll be there in a minute. Let's see if there's anybody here on the page that we can quote before we do the English footnote. Let's see if there's anybody that is telling us something interesting. And how about the Mitzvah David? He's going to weigh in on the words, Leven Chayel. If you're going to be a Ben Chayel, a worthy, virtuous guy, so what does it mean? Says the Mitzvah David, Ratzalomar, he means to say, La'avod avodoso, to do his work. Kishar avde amelech. Solomon says, listen, I expect you to fall in line and do whatever else everybody's doing if they're working for me. I don't expect you to stand on your head. Nobody does that. But you've got to be respectful. You can't be a pretender anymore. You can't do another rebellion next week when you wake up and say, oh, man, we blew that. Let's do it better this week. None of that. You can't do that. You have to serve me as king like everyone else who serves me as king, which means all Israel. You've got to just fall in line and be like every other Jew. Do you think you can handle that? That's the question he's posing to Adonio. Can you handle being like everybody else on the team? I'm the coach, you're the player, behave. Do what you got to do. Do the avoda, you know, do what I say. If I'm going to proclaim proclamations, abide by them like everybody else does. And then let's take a look at the Mitzvah, same commentator, Mitzvah David, on when he says, Lo yipol misara so arza. The Mitzvah Sion gives a very literal definition. He means misara rose. Obviously, I mean, not a hair in your head is going to fall off if you behave. But is there a little bit more that we can glean from this? And I think there might be. Take a look. If you have them, the Mitzvah David says, Lo yipol. You know, a hair will not fall. Ritzono lomar, he means to say, Solomon means, lo yunash al hava. He's not going to be punished for that which already happened. Shlomo is going to cut him a fresh, new notebook. He's going to cut him a new page. He's going to be writing on a tablet that's not been written on. It's all, I'm forgiving. I'm forgetting. Let it go. You're not going to be punished for what happened in the past. Afilu onesh muat, even a little punishment. I'm not going to meet that out. I'm not going to do it to you. I'm not going to punish you for all this pretending. Right? V'amar b'loshen guzmar k'derach sh'abrios omrim. And he said it in this kind of a way, in this way of speaking, the derach guzmar, in a certain way of phrase, the way that people talk. I won't let a hair fall off his head. He has nothing to worry about if he behaves. And I'm not going to hurt him for what he did, you know, yesterday and the day before. It's not going to happen. Let's just start, turn over a new leaf, a new page, and let's move on. And that's what he's saying to Adonijo. And that's the phrase, Lo yipol misara so arza. Not a hair will fall off his head. I'm not interested in punishing him, but he's got to fall in line with everybody else. That's not asking much. You got to behave like everybody else does. Take a look at the footnote on 52 if you have it. If you don't, I'll be happy to read it to you. So Shlomo said, even one hair of his shall not fall. Shlomo did not swear. That's where I got it from. Actually pointed it out to me, so I was a little bit ahead of the curve. Shlomo did not swear, but he gave his word that Adonijo would not be punished for his past misdeeds if he would but be a loyal and valiant servant of the king like all his other officers. If, however, he would display the slightest disloyalty, he'd be put to death for his past rebellion. And that's the Abarbanel, and that's the Mitzvah David. So he's got to really be careful. We're going to see him coming back next chapter. He's off the stage. I mean, he's waiting in the wings.
That's why he wasn't given amnesty for what he's already done, because right now we're starting over. If you toe the line, you're fine. If not, I get you for what you did before.
Right, exactly right. If you don't toe the line, then you're going to be liable for the contempt for that, for the new rebellion and for the old as well, and you're going to have to face the death penalty. Now, that's the most sobering thing you can tell somebody. I'm willing to forgive you, but you got to be advised. If you step out of line, I'm going to whack you. I'm going to kill you. The typical person's going, I think I can work with this. I think I can do this. My boss and I are having a little bit of conversation about how to deal with a client. I may have made a mistake. I didn't get this information, that information. I'm not facing a death penalty, and I'm not facing termination. But even I don't want to step out of line, because I have a little position over there. I don't want to jeopardize it, but I got a client saying, hey, I thought we had an agreement. I'm going, yeah, we do. And I got to please my boss, and it's a very, very touchy kind of place to be in. It's not that simple, and it's exhausting, and it's just you know, it's not so pleasant. But all events, I think we're going to work our way through it. And, you know, Adonijo also works his way through this. Let's see what he does. He really is going to take the high road, because nobody wants to die before his time. Most people don't, anyway. And Adonijo didn't want to either. So take a look at the last verse in chapter 1 of 1 Kings. This is really a nice milestone. we often really drag our feet over here. We've kind of moved through nicely at a decent pace. Verse 53, the final verse in the chapter. Vayishlach HaMelech Shlomo. So King Solomon sent. Vayriduhu Me'al HaMizbeach. They brought him down. They caused him to come down from the Mizbeach, from the altar. Vayavo, he came. Vayishtachu LaMelech Shlomo. He bowed to King Shlomo. Vayomer lo Shlomo, then Solomon said to him, Lech leveisecha, go home. Literally, go to your house. And the rabbis are going, now why would the king have to tell somebody that he's got to go home? Doesn't your typical person, I don't know, he comes in front of a king, he bows, he greets him, gives him a gift. I don't know, I'm just thinking, that's what you do. And then you kind of make, you know, you bow again and you show respect and you walk out. I mean, you know, you don't overstay your welcome, and you don't be a nudnik. And, you know, you don't run out within the first second of meeting him either. You stick around, you show respect, you show face, and then you respectfully bow out and you go on with your life. For King Solomon to say to him, now you can go home, for the rabbis, that's like what's up with that? What was he doing that would have caused Solomon to tell him, you know, I appreciate it, but now you can go home. So what was he doing?
I think that's his way of showing, I'm not coming after you.
Right.
That, you know, go home, be at peace.
Right. Go to your wife and kids or whatever you have. Go home, be a family man if you are, and you're not in any danger. I'm not going to send anybody after you. Go home. That's what Mrs. Brewer was saying. And sure, that's great. But you know what? For some commentators, they see a certain action or behavior that he does that triggered Solomon's need, I guess, to invite him to, you know, leave the court. He's allowed to now go home. And apparently he's not. So what's going on with that? Let's take a look. See what's going on with him. Yes. It's in the Hebrew and the Mefarshim. We're going to see it in the English. If you have it, we're on page 17 of 1 Kings, if you have the Judaica Press. So here's what the Matzidas David is saying. They brought him down from the altar. Solomon instructed him to get down from the altar and to rely on his promise not to harm him. So they brought him down. And according to this, Solomon instructed him to get down from the altar. It sounds like Shlomo was saying to the men, tell him to come down. And maybe he wasn't coming down. So to me, when I see the verb vayriduhu, it doesn't say vayered, he descended. It says vayriduhu, they caused him to descend. And that tells me that maybe he was like hesitating ever so slightly. And they said, listen, you know, nothing to worry about. He's not going to kill you. He gave you his word. He's not going to swear. He doesn't take oaths lightly. Excuse me, but he's not going to kill you either. Trust us, he's not going to kill you. And they coaxed him down. Look at the next footnote. I'll read it. Shlomo said to him, go to your house. So why would he have to say that? There had been a misunderstanding. This is a long Abarbanel that they're quoting. There had been a misunderstanding. Shlomo had told Adonio to be a valiant man, a ben chayal. Well, literally, a chayal is a soldier. So a ben chayal means like a valorous person, maybe a soldier-like type person, a very, very brave type of person, a warrior type person. And that maybe is what Adonio understood to be the case. He told him to be a ben chayal, a valiant man. And Adonio understood this to mean a servant who would constantly be before the king to serve him and otherwise show his loyalty to him. In other words, standing in front of him like a good soldier would. A good soldier who's told by the king to be a ben chayal says to himself, well, how am I going to start things off by walking out and not being a Ben Chayil. He just told me to be a Ben Chayil. I think I better be a Ben Chayil. I'm going to stand at attention until he tells me something else to do. Okay, and he's standing at attention, maybe with a spear in his hand, acting like a soldier. That might be what's going on over here. And for the Abarbanel, that seems to be the most sensible thing that's going on over here. That he's instructed to be a Ben Chayil, and that's what he's doing. He's acting like a soldier. He therefore remained standing before the king to comply with his wish and waited for further instructions. When Shlomo became aware of this misunderstanding, he corrected it immediately. He told him that it was not his servitude which he was seeking, but rather his general loyalty. Shlomo dismissed Adoniyahu and told Adoniyahu to go home. Too many pronouns over there. When I was in Chappelle's, we didn't like pronouns. He said to him, he said to him, he said to him. When you study Talmud, that can easily happen. He dismissed him. No. Shlomo dismissed Adoniyahu. Just be careful about it. But who else obviously were doing it? Shlomo dismissed Adoniyahu and told him that he was then free to go home. And that's the Abarbanel. And that's a very workable explanation to me that makes sense out of the phrase, Ben Chayil, be a valorous man, a valiant man. And it also makes sense out of the phrase, Lech Leveisecha, go back to your house. That works for me. And now that we've finished chapter 1, there might be a cause for a kiddush in our shul, the Gulf Manor Synagogue. I don't think we've ever finished a chapter so quickly, but we didn't just daven it up. We spent a little bit of time on it. We gave it its due, we think. And now we have the great pleasure and the great privilege of doing 20 minutes worth of chapter 2. So let's get right to it. Over here, this is fascinating stuff, people. This is really good narrative. David HaMelech is now going to give instructions from his bed, on his deathbed. It's very, very painful, but there he is. He's leaving us, and he's giving final words of instruction to his son Shlomo. How old is Shlomo? How old is he? According to the Judaica press, he's extremely young. I'll give it away. 12 years old. So says the footnote over here. 12 years old is how old Shlomo was when he became the king of Israel. By anybody's estimation, that's young. And it's just young, so he needs guidance, and he's going to get it from his father.
And that's why he has to have Adoniyahu's loyalty, yeah. And he can't swear to him that he, you know, it's all how you act.
That's right. It's all up to you. I'm not going to swear to you, give you this carte blanche thing, as you said earlier. Oh, I swear to you, I'm never going to hurt you. No. Shlomo says, listen here, bud. I'm starting out. The last thing I need is another rebellion. I'm 12 years old. I may be wise, but I'm only 12. And I don't need the aggravation. I need this, like my boss and I always thought, a hurricane's coming. I need this aggravation. A tornado's coming. I need this aggravation. I mean, obviously it's funny talk in the teeth of a serious, you know, thing. And that's where the humor is sometimes. I mean, Shlomo is saying, who needs the tzoras? Just behave yourself. It's all I ask you to do is just be, like the Parshan said, be like anybody else, like the Mitzvah said, be like all the other Kisharav the Amelachs, be like every other servant I've got, and don't rebel against me. Who needs that? So he's 12, and he's going to be instructed now by his saintly father. King David is on his deathbed, and the life is ebbing away. So here is David. It's chapter 2, and it's verse 1. Vayikrivu yimei David lamus. Now, literally, and I mean it, literally, here's how you translate those words. And the rabbis are all over that. So the days of David were approaching to die. Now, that's how the author writes it. And now, there's going to be plenty of room to darshan that. But it doesn't say, you know, that David is passing, but rather his days are approaching to pass. The days of David are approaching rapidly to pass away. We'll get unpacked in a moment. Vayitzad Shlomo ben Olamor. So he commanded his son Solomon, saying as follows. Before we get there, though, let's just get to that footnote where it does comment about the days drawing near to die. And what does that really mean? The days are dying. And yet you do see an idea like that, right? Avraham Avinu was bar by yamim, pasuk says in Bereishis. Avraham was somebody who literally, you don't really translate it literally, but he was coming or he came in days or with days. In other words, the rabbis explained, he filled up every single day. Every minute counted, every hour counted, and every day counted. He didn't waste his time. He came back to God with filled up treasures of every single day. He filled them up with the good stuff. So over here, David's days are approaching to pass away. Our sages, near the end of quote, the Alkot Shimoni, I'm on page 17 if you have the Judaica, footnote to Pasuk 1. Our sages make note of this, of his days are nearing to die, and they question, is it possible that days die? They conclude, therefore, that righteous, pious people never die. Only their days end, but their souls continue to live on. And those souls continue to exalt the Almighty. And that's the Yalkut Shimoni. And that's a nice thing. That's a nice idea. The days may end. One's days on earth will end. True enough. But the soul lives on for eternity if it's worthy, if it did the right stuff, if it didn't do the bad stuff. Certain bad things create a problem of epic proportion. We should know about it. David was doing the right stuff all his life. And his soul will continue on and on. And so that is a taich for Vayikrivu Yemei David Lemus. The days of David were approaching to pass away. And so he commanded his son as follows. Pasuk Beis, chapter 2, verse 2. Anochi olech b'derech kol haaretz. I am going along the path. I am walking the path of all the earth. In other words, I'm going the way of all flesh. That is perhaps a more contemporary English usage. I'm going the way of all flesh. I'm on my way out. The chazakta, you will strengthen, and it doesn't mean you will strengthen something else. You're going to strengthen yourself. You got to toughen up. V'ayisa le'ish, and you should be a man. I once went to a makubal. This is a true story. I went to a makubal from Israel. He was dressed like Elvis, white from top to bottom, and I mean that.
Weekday?
Yeah. He came from Israel to America to help people with their neshamas.
Look, it's such an outfit worth the money. You lay out for it because, you know, it brings in money, right?
Well, more people will. All I can tell you is this. This guy was scary good. Somebody said that he went into a mikveh in Philadelphia and he said, did I ever tell you this? Oh, he says, I feel the vibrations of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. So everybody said, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, he's buried in Israel. What's that got to do with a mikveh in Philadelphia? And nobody could figure it out. And so people asked around. And the story was that somebody had gone to the tzion of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh in Israel and lifted a little pebble off of that tzion, brought it back from Israel, and when they were doing excavations to build the mikveh, he allegedly tossed it in to the foundation. And when this man went into the mikveh, as he did every morning, he felt the Or HaChaim's vibrations in that mikveh. That's serious stuff. This guy was the Baba Sali's right-hand man. Young guy, but he was his right-hand man. I'm going, wow, that is quite the story. And he would tell you, listen, this is what you got to work on. Here's what you got to do. I mean, you told him your name. You write down your name. I mean, he was a gewalt. He was one of the types of guys who would look at you in the face and say, you got to work on this Avera, you got to work on that Avera. And what can I say? I mean, people walked out of there, they were not disappointed. They were a little bit unnerved, but at least they were given good guidance. I mean, some of us were scared out of our wits. But if you did what he told you to do, then you're on the straight and narrow. And I did, and I like to think that thank God everything worked out okay. Because I sort of am trying to be okay. At all events, he said to me, this is why I'm bringing it up. He said to me, what do you do? All in Hebrew. He spoke French, Arabic, and Hebrew. Hebrew is our bridge language. I said, I'm a lawyer. He said, "You're a lawyer. What kind of law do you do?" I said to myself, "I don't even know how to say litigation either." I said, "It's how the lawyers fight with each other in court." He says, "You're too nice of a guy." He says, "You're too nice. You got to toughen up. You are just too nice. You got to get tough. It's a tough world up there. You got to get tough." I'm going, that's the first time any rabbi in my life ever told me, you know, to toughen up instead of just being nice. You're supposed to be nice, right?
No, rabbi, it proves to be, you know, the utter baselessness and the, you know, phoniness of this.
No, actually, on the contrary, I'm very sorry, because years later when I was clerking for a judge, and I was really, really upset by him, and he was really upset by me, and it was really, this relationship had gone south. I had gotten a very high political appointment, and I was his judge's secretary, of, you know, his personal law secretary, writing his decisions. It was terrible. And I said to myself, well, I could either quit right now, it's June, I've only been here for 4 months, I could either quit. That would look horrible. I mean, what kind of a resume is that going to look like? I won't even be able to put it on. Let me at least stick this out for 1 year. If I stick it out for a year, it'll look like any other clerkship for 1 year. And in the law, that's perfectly sensible. You stay with somebody for 1 year because that was the agreement. That was the court had that agreement with you, whatever. 1 year is something. 2 or 3 months is insanity. So I thought back to that rabbi, that Makubo, and I said, that guy told me to toughen up. I'm going to toughen up. And I toughened myself up, went to work every day. He wound up taking files off my desk, giving them to other law secretaries to work on. It was the most unnerving and terrible kind of work atmosphere. When we had other law students over there from law school, he was so nice in front of them. Then when they left, he would bark at me or ignore me. It was like being married in a horrible, horrible relationship. I mean, being a clerk to a judge is kind of like that. Excuse me. So that advice of years before came back, and I worked on it, and I said, I'm going to toughen myself up. And I toughened up, and then by December, it was obviously unbearable for the both of us, mostly for me. And he came over, he said, I'm either going to fire you or you can quit. You can take your choice. I said, okay, I'll quit. But that was like December time, and that was almost a year. And so nobody really at that point, you know, nobody really cared. It wasn't like it was 2 months then. It was, you know, closer to 10, 11 months, whatever it was. So that looked a little more normal. So I must say that advice that this man gave me to toughen up came up very, very good. What can I say? It came up in spades in my life a couple of years later, and I utilized it. I toughened up, and I toughed it out, and thank God everything worked out for the best. We have a few more minutes. So Shlomo is being told by his father David, the Chazak Tah, you will strengthen yourself, you'll be strong, you'll toughen up, and you're going to be a man. You're going to have to be a man. Just, you know, toughen up and be what you got to be.
Maybe this has to do with the fact that he wasn't that bar mitzvah yet.
Okay, let's take a look at that. Let's take a look at that footnote. It might very well be. He's saying to him, you're not yet a man, but you got to act like a man anyway. I mean, in 1 year, you're going to be a man. You're going to be bar mitzvah. Right now, you're not. But still, v'yisalish. Act like an adult. Act like a grown-up would. See the footnote over here in verse 2. I go the way of all the earth. Okay? Shlomo was only 12 years old when David died. To cushion the shock which Shlomo was expected to experience at his death, David consoled him by saying there should be no cause for lengthy bereavement. Since he, David, had attained his 70th year, his death would not be a tragic or premature passing, but rather it would be the way of all the earth. And this is a longer barbanel, so we'll just finish it up. If, however, he would be shocked by the loss of an advisor in the complicated and burdensome affairs of government, to this David instructs him to show yourself a man. Heretofore, you were young and inexperienced, and greatly dependent on my fatherly counsel. I don't know when that was. He just became the king a minute ago. Well, I don't know, I don't want to question anything if I can help it.
Well, you don't know what kind of fatherly counsel he got as he was growing up.
Right. Although he had a son who never, you know,
Right, but that doesn't mean that...
That Shlomo experienced that. He had a son that he never really kind of... Adonio. He never really kind of took the whip to him and said, what are you doing? What is up with you? Pasuk testifies he, David never did that. We don't see that similar kind of disregard. I don't like that term, but we don't see that kind of parental paradigm regarding Shlomo. It doesn't say anywhere that Shlomo, he never got lectured. It doesn't say that. So I presume that he did.
The Midrashim, there's one, I think it's the Gemara, which very graphic, has gone probably on the, I don't know, Spankings websites or whatever they have. I don't know if they have those, but
I like that, the Spanking websites.
I've heard that things exist. That they had a graphic description of how Bathsheba would, today she would be called into to what is
JFS, Jobs and Family Services, think of get away.
Right, so it says that she would tie him to the amud. What's the word? Mm-hmm. I forget. Korcho or something to the amud, and then she would take the whip to him and really whip him.
Oh, Shlomo.
Yeah, and it describes while she's whipping what her lecture was. And the implication is not that he was so naughty, but simply that, I don't know, there are certain midos that she saw in him that needed to be, let's say, corrected in that manner. And she would give him a mussar.
Wow. Thank you, Rabbi Berloff. I'm not aware of that at all. That's a good gemara. That is great. And that I got to try to track that down. And if you do, please tell me. And I'll try to make it available somehow, some way to everybody. Photocopy it up. That is fascinating. Thank you very much. I'm not aware of that. Never came across it. Doesn't mean anything. A lot of it I've never come across. But apparently, as a brother said, Bathsheba was whipping her son, getting him into line, and apparently making him chazak, strengthening him. And so over here, apparently he's thought upon prior to this, heretofore you were young and inexperienced, and you were greatly dependent upon fatherly counsel. Now you're expected to be strong and mature in your wisdom, and you're no longer going to be dependent upon others. So says the Abarbanel. That is interesting. So that is his shot in, you shall be strong and be a man. We have maybe time for one more puzzle. Oh, this is a very long one. I'll read it in the Hebrew, we'll translate it, and then we'll unpack it next week. And as I was telling the group over the phone, next week, might as well say it now, next week is kind of Erev Yom Tov, let's be honest. I mean, it's the night before the holiday, Tuesday night, because the holiday starts Wednesday night. So obviously lots of cooking and cleaning for a three-day holiday. I get it. On the one hand, I don't want to discontinue class. On the other hand, I understand that people are going to be away. But here's my pshara. My compromise is that I understand if the live class cannot meet because it can't. People have things to do. But I thought we have 6,000 listeners people are calling in, and some of them might be able to actually call in. So I was hoping to give a class next week on the eve of Rosh Hashanah as one last hour of Limud HaTorah to Chapat Arayin before the new year begins. That was my svara. How does that sit with the class?
How would it be, if I may suggest that, I might be able to, if it takes place, I might be able to come. I have to be very busy. I don't know what it'll be with me, but it's not, I'm not familiar with it out. If it were not for the radio audience, I'd probably suggest not to have it.
Right.
However, may I suggest a compromise?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've done this since we're on the air, but sometimes you would deviate for a week or two and, you know, deal with something else rather than
do that.
The subject. If we would do that next week, so sure. we can make it, it's great. And sure. If not, there wouldn't be anything in the flow that would be missing.
Yeah, Rabbi Berloff offers a nice compromise. So how about we do that? I'll prepare something that's related to Rosh Hashanah and share it with the Olam. And this way the live class will be together with the phone class, everybody calling, we'll all be on the same page. So it does make a lot of sense. That's fair. So let me just at least read verse 3 because I promised I would. This is what David is saying. I'll read in English. Keep the charge of God your God to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes and his commandments and his judgments and his testimonies as it is written in the law of Moses. so that you may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn. So my dear friends, let's try to meet next week. If, however, some of you cannot make it, we well understand. We won't be doing Menachem Aleph next week. We'll do a special Rosh Hashanah-oriented shir, and I'll prepare that this coming week, God willing. And this way, everybody will be on the same page. If you cannot make it for any reason, I understand. And I join in with King David that you should be blessed. There's kol asher tifneh sham in every way that you turn. And that this upcoming year should be for you all. Ekseva v'chasima tova. If you cannot join us next week, we all understand it. Wishing all of you, both those who will join us and those who won't, a healthy and happy new year filled with lots of gashmius and ruchnius and nachas and joy and good health and a time to enjoy them. Wishing everybody a very good week, and for those of you not going to be with us next week, a very healthy, happy Shana Tova, new year. All the best to you, and hopefully we'll see you all and talk to you all next Tuesday night at 7:30 on the eve of Rosh Hashanah. All the best, Wolfopsa, signing out from Gulf Manor Synagogue School of Jewish Studies in Cincinnati, Ohio. Have a great week. Bye-bye now.